think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 277 of Low Limit Football on this 13th of April, 2020. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we'll take a look in on the leagues as everything is still locked down because of the coronavirus. We'll try to anticipate when the leagues will be coming back, and we will be joined by a couple of great guests to have some great discussions, which we'll let you in on in just a moment. Let me get my co-host here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How are you, my man? Are you staying healthy?
Doing well, Joe. Yes, I am. Everyone's going well. My parents are fine. My direct family is fine. And yeah, it's troubling times for a lot of us, for all of us, really, to go in this kind of new world. But the important thing is that everyone to stay safe, stay healthy, stay indoors, and unless you really have to go out if it's necessary, and just respect people and just like understand that we're all going through the same thing. But I'm doing well, Joe, and hopefully you are as well.
Yeah, I am. You know, obviously during our little break here, I did lose my uncle to this virus, and you know, this virus is going to touch us all, whether it be personally, whether it be, you know, family. It's going to hit us all, and it is a big deal. And you know, I just can't emphasize enough that when you're out there, make sure you cover your mouth, wash your hands. Stay clean, keep social distancing, keep that in mind, stay at least 6 feet or 2 meters away from everybody. Make sure that we suffer a little bit now so that we don't have to all suffer later. And I think that's probably the best message I can give, and hopefully people will follow it. So a little bit of a departure from our normal show tonight. Normally we would have trivia guests. We've got a few topics tonight. We're going to do something a little bit different. No trivia tonight. Obviously the leagues are still in lockdown. We're going to give you what right now they're anticipating to come back at. And then we've got a couple of great interviews. We were very, very lucky tonight to have Mr. Marco Trovato, president of Club Olimpia in Paraguay. The first time we've had a club president. So that's a massive, massive interview that we got to do today. And we also had Stel Stiliano from Shoot the Defense come on the show as well, which Stel is always super entertaining. One of the hardest working men in podcasting right now. You have to go check out Shoot the Defense. 30 shows in 30 days. The man is just a machine despite what's going on around the world. So, and we had a great interview with him as well. Rob, I'm going to start real quick and just kind of run these through on you quickly. Let's start at the EPL. Right now, the EPL is looking to possibly turn the lights back on. They are anticipating something as early as June 6th. And again, none of these are in stone. Everything is by feel based on how things are going in the world. Right now, they're looking at a June 6th return date for the Premier League, and they're also considering the Championship League 1 and League 2. So this is going to be a ramp up going on there, Rob. The Bundesliga right now is talking about a return, actually even earlier than that, Rob. They're talking about a May date, and I'm just looking for the date right here quickly. That it was, I'm just, if you'll bear with me 1 second, I had the notes up and then I can't find it. But somewhere in the middle of May, they were going to return and have everything done by June 30th. with the caveat that they would be playing behind closed doors no matter what for the rest of the season. In Italy, right now, one of the hardest hit countries in the world when it comes to COVID-19, they really don't have a date set. They were looking at possibly doing something in the June-ish range, but right now everything is completely on hold as Italy struggles greatly. Spain also another place struggling greatly with the coronavirus. They were looking at possibly coming back in sometime in May or June as well, but again, there's no set date for that as well. Ligue 1 right now, Rob, is looking to get back on June 17th and to end the season by July 25th. And the last one, MLS, that we cover was targeting May 10th as a possible date to be able to do this. But again, in concurrence with the Centers for Disease Control, everything is going to be up in the air. Rob, in your gut, where do you feel this is going to go? Do you feel that they're going to be able to get these matches in? And I think at this point, we have to accept the fact that they're all going to be behind closed doors. But do you feel that that's going to happen? Maybe the 2021 season gets pushed off a little bit because of this. What are your thoughts?
It really is up in the air for anything to happen. Every country is different. I mean, more cases are more severe in certain countries than they are in other places. So really isn't up in the air. And I think what we're going to do and get to the interview Mr. Trovato, I feel like it's just really dependent on all the other sports too. I mean, how they view all of it. Because obviously, if one league comes back, then that means the other ones have to come back. You know, so it's going to be the case of just who's going to follow suit first, and then it's to see if people can follow the same pattern. In the case of what's going to happen, I mean, this is going to completely shift the entire calendar as a whole. I mean, with transfer windows, the way the competitions are starting, that kind of thing. It's going to be very interesting and very weird to see. I feel like, you know, for certain competitions, maybe you already need to give the champions as it is. Maybe for someone like the Premier League with Liverpool, who are probably going to win the Premier League because of the advantage that they have, PSG and Liga. In Serie A, you still have a race. Bundesliga, you still have a race. Even in La Liga, you still have a race. Whereas in MLS, I mean, the season just started, so you can't really say what could happen. But, you know, maybe a shortened season or something might be the best case for all of it. Or just canceling the season, just giving it a champion. I don't think giving it a vacated season would be very well.
No.
But everything's up in the air, dude, and I really would love to give them an honest answer, but I don't know.
And MLS, you know, just to go real quickly on that, this would have been MLS's 25th season, so I think there's a great emphasis on actually making it. It's one of those anniversary, one of those marquee anniversary type situations, so I think there's going to be a real push in MLS to even extend into November and December if they need to at least get a season done. We'll have to see. And again, all contingent upon how the world handles the coronavirus and everything that's going on. So we'll keep you up to date. And as things progress, hopefully, Rob, you and I will be able to bring shows with a little more frequency, a little more normalcy would be nice. If you've been missing us, we did put out a 6-series show called The Hall of Foot, which is on our website. It's on Google Play. It is on iTunes. It is on Stitcher. It is on Spotify. And it basically looks back on some of the greatest footballers in the history of the sport. Definitely want to go check that out. So without further ado, Rob, we were very, very lucky to have Marco Trovato, the president of Club Olimpia, the most successful soccer club in Paraguay, join us. This is the only Paraguayan side that's won the Copa Libertadores. They've won the championship four seasons straight at this point. And to be able to get a second to ask him about the life of a president, transfers, you know, all of those types of things, we got the chance to talk to him. So let's definitely bring that interview up. And without further ado, the Marco Trovato interview. Joining us now on Low Limit Football, the president of Club Olimpia in Paraguay, Mr. Marco Trovato. Thank you for joining us on the show. My first question to you is regarding player transfers, especially not specifically the Adebayor transfer, but in general, we have rules in Paraguay as well as many other countries where you are limited into how many foreign players you can either have on the pitch or have on the club. So I want to ask, what's the process of identifying a foreign player to bring into the club and the process of bringing that player into the club from your perspective?
The process to identify is you have to talk with your coach, and he has to identify what he needs to the next season. After that, we have to go to see what is in the market in huge level. But because it's, for us, it's very important not to bring the name, that it's important to us to bring the moment. If the player is in the good moment, he don't have injuries and something like that, it's very, very important for us. After, hello?
Yep, go ahead.
After that, it's important to have the okay of the player, because bringing to Paraguay, to South America, a player that plays 10 or 13 years in Europe, it's very difficult, because they don't want to cross the ocean. But when you have the okay of the player, we have a last step, that is the money. And in the money, you have to fight. He fight, and when we have an arrangement, the contract is closed.
Now, Marco, I want to jump in about how you do your daily business as a president, because looking at what you've done, you've been a part of Olympia for many years, and you really have earned your right to move all the way to the top. I just want to know, what is a day-to-day life for you, Marco Trovato, the president? You know, what goes into a normal day during the crazy season that is in Paraguay?
Yeah, it's a very crazy day, because you have to change the chip of your head in very, very often in the day, because I'm a director of a commercial company. We have industries in Paraguay, and I have to take care of Olympia, and after that I have to take care of my company also. And you start very early in the morning, and you sleep very very in the night. It's very, very complicated, because many things in football occurs at night, and if you want to have a contract of a player or talk with a representative, you have to call at night. And and this is I've been almost 6 years being president, but I at the beginning was difficult. Right now is my life, it's no problem.
So obviously, as president, you have endured a successful era as Olympia president, you know, winning 5 league titles, 4 of them being straight over the last 2 years. You've really earned a successful formula with a good coach like Daniel Ganero and really great players that have become successful. What do you believe is the secret for the success? Because we know Olympia have a huge history, as we all know here in the United States. But what makes it special for you as a president to handle a successful team? And what kind of formula do you have that helps them become successful?
Only one word. It's work. Work and much work. You have to work more than the others. And that's the formula of success, because you're going to make mistakes. That's normal. You're going to contract players that doesn't work. That's normal. But you have to learn about your mistakes, learn about what's happening in the football globally, and take a vision of what you need and run for it. That's the only way that I know. Nobody in the world prepares you to be a president of a club. That's you don't have a university that learned that explain you how to do. But that's in that way you have to learn very quickly and be strong in the defeat, and celebrate in the victory.
Now, obviously, we're entering a new decade, and I think for you as president, you know, you want to see Olympia achieve great things, and that great thing would be, you know, being one of the best in South America and competing with the teams from Brazil and Argentina you know, to win the Copa Libertadores. I mean, where do you see Olimpia as you under your presidency in the next 5 years? You would say.
I see Olimpia champion again of the Copa Libertadores because we start a plan 5 years ago. We know that to return to the South American elite will be very difficult, but we are in the way because you need to have the best players in your country or the best Paraguayan players because River Plate Argentina be champion with Argentinians and Flamengo be champion with Brazilians, and you have to have the best Paraguayan players in your team to be champion of Libertadores, and we are in that way. After that, you have to have a super earn of money because you have to receive a lot of money to fight with great clubs in South America, and we turn the incomes of the club from 1.2 million to 25 million a year, and that's the huge work that we make in Olimpia. It's to earn much more money to fight with the greatest clubs in South America.
We see a lot of teams across South America be known for their youth, and we've seen that with so many great South American talents coming from there and then heading to Europe. You know, obviously, I think for any team, it's always important to have a good academy, and we've seen a lot of players come out of Paraguay, and especially in Olimpia, be able to become successful and then make that jump to a bigger league. What have you been trying to do to invest into the young players in your under-17s, under-20s, to make them successful for the future?
When in 2013, I created the Fundación Franjeada. It's a foundation that works exclusively with the young players. And 1 year later, I become president of Olimpia. And we in that moment we start. My vision was clearly about the young players, because if you don't have good young players, you will not succeed in South America in football. That's impossible. The biggest club in the world have Barcelona, Real Madrid, Manchester City has its own academy, and why do not? We are a little club compared with them. We don't have it. And in 2013, I started working with the Fundación Franjeada to improve the work that we have in young players, and today we have an academy with seven pitches in Villeta, the place that the Formativas Olimpia or the base football trains, and we have a lot of investment to bring the best young players to Olimpia.
Now, you talk about having that European relate or connection. You know, how good is that influence from the European clubs, you know, and also the connections that you have in Europe? How important is that for a team like Olimpia?
No, for us, it's very important because they have a lot of experience and helps us to not take the same mistake that they already took. And that's for us it's very important because we are working closely with Real Madrid from just 1 year, mm-hmm. And with a lot of communication, and especially in the base football. For us, it's very important to work with them.
For sure. And obviously, now we know how Olimpia has gotten that kind of attention. At the moment because of one transfer, and that transfer is Emmanuel Adebayor. We saw some news that, you know, due to this coronavirus situation, he is currently in Togo, back in his home country. And there had been some reports about how, you know, because of the way the Libertadores is still in question and in the air. We don't know what the future of him at Olympia. So I just want to make sure, what's your take on Adebayor and what's his future at Olympia once this whole crisis is over?
Oh, Emmanuel has a contract with the club. I talked with him 2 days ago. He's perfect in his home. And when the competition come back, he will come back to Paraguay. That's no problem. We have a very clearly project that we want. And Emmanuel is part of that, with Libertadores or without. We have to fight the national tournament, and that for us is very important to fight for the fifth straight championship.
Now, Marco, I want to jump in here quickly because I want to ask you about Roque Santa Cruz before we run into some Libertadores questions. Obviously, Roque is arguably one of the most recognized Paraguayan footballers ever, one of the most successful footballers ever. Went to Bayern Munich, Manchester City, Malaga. He's been all over the world, but he's an Olympia product from the youth levels all the way up to now. What does, and he's currently captain of the team, what does his leadership mean for the club and for those younger players that Rob had asked you about earlier?
Oh, Roque is an example. It's a very image that he has. He's important to us because he is Olympia product and for the start and for the young players, he's a wonderful person, but he's a huge professional because he trains a lot, 3 times a day. He's the first person to arrive to the training camp, and he's the last one to leave the training camp. And Roque is really, really important for us. And that showed that he's playing almost with 40 years of age. He's playing so well. And that's very, very important to the image, to the example for the young players.
And it's a great example to bring up because in the going back to the Libertadores right now in Group G, as we stand before the football world came to a screeching halt, Olympia sits second behind Santos. Their next scheduled match, according to my information, is supposed to be on the 5th against Delfín. But obviously with the coronavirus, the effects of what's going on there, that's all still up in the air. So I'm asking more of your opinion than the official word from CONMEBOL. What do you feel will happen with the Libertadores? Do you feel that the competition will be canceled? Do you feel that it will be postponed a little deeper to allow this virus to pass? What is your gut feeling with the future of the Copa Libertadores for 2020?
That's a good question, because for me it's very complicated for team sports in the world, not for only Olympia or the Copa Libertadores, because how do you play a championship, a tournament in basketball or in American football or in soccer or in whatever sport that you have a team? How do you play within coronavirus? And this is very complicated, but because you have in football, you have a 30-person team, 30 players. You have also 10 persons in the coaches, and after that you have person in massage, in medics, and many people around the team. I think will be at least a normal team. It's 70, 75 people with the players. How do you do to play a tournament with this virus in on the street? Because what happens if you are playing and one people of your team makes infected? You have to put the complete team in quarantine. And what happened in the tournament? What happened with the matches that you have to play? And I think it's very, very complicated. We was talking about that with the CONMEBOL medics and the association, the Paraguayan association also. And I think we will be very complicated to the team sports to come back in the world, and that's a fact. It's very complicated, and we have to see what happened. Pray God to have a vaccine as soon as possible.
And I agree with you 100%. Marco, I want to thank you for coming on the show and joining us for a great interview. Best of luck to Club Olympia and to you as well. And hopefully everyone remains safe and healthy and we get back to football very, very soon.
Thank you very much. And we are here in Paraguay fighting with this also. And we are only praying God to return to the pitches. That's what we want right now. Thank you very much.
And thanks again to Marco Trovato from Club Olympia for joining us and giving us a moment of his time to talk about the day in and day out process of being a club president. Going from a club president to a man that maybe should be president, we'll go, Rob, from Marco Trovato to one of our great friends, Mr. Stel Stiliano from the Shoot the Defense podcast. Stel, welcome back to the show, mate. Always glad to have you on. How have you been? How are things going for you right now in London, especially with the virus?
Did you just say that I should be president?
Yes.
What kind of president, though, is the hard thing?
All good campaigns start somewhere. Might as well start right here, right now.
Mate, well, that's the best intro I've ever had. I need intro music like a wrestler. You know what I mean? That's what I need from now on. Give me intro music.
In a stage to come off of, right. So how is everything going right now with the virus for you guys in London?
How's it going? Well, apparently we're supposed to be in lockdown, but people aren't abiding by the rules. You got idiots going to the park. You got idiots not keeping the 2 meter distance or the 10 feet distance, as you guys call it. Mm-hmm. I can't be objective when it comes to this because I've got no tolerance for idiots. My tolerance levels have decreased substantially since becoming a father, and you'd think it'd be the opposite. But look, people are dying left, right, and center. We've got young people dying, we've got old people dying. It seems to me that the government don't know exactly how to deal with this. I said it from day dot. We should have been locked down 4 weeks, flat out. No one allowed outside their house. Mm-hmm. Unless they have to go shopping, unless it's a vital emergency, or do what they did in Cyprus, or what they're doing in Cyprus, which is obviously where my family's from, and you have to send a text to a number telling the authorities where you're going, and you've got 2 hours to go and come back. So if it's shopping, if it's going to deliver medication to an older person and whatnot, I know it's a bad example because Cyprus is an island with like 1 million people. So it's easier to police, if that makes sense. But
sure.
We've got the resources. Excuse me. We've got the resources. So why can't we do something like that? But listen, my family's safe. My friends are safe. And I've had some bad news from other friends about their relatives passing as a result of the coronavirus. So it's not all happy days here. Mm. But you just got to take it one step at a time and just... be sensible, really. Be sensible. And look, I don't know what you guys are like with it when it comes to your family, but I haven't seen... Okay, well, I saw my parents the other day, but I was literally outside their house and it was like Romeo and Juliet. They were upstairs looking through the window and I was downstairs. Yeah. So, yeah, it's tricky. And same. You guys come from a similar cultural background where family is very important and we're very close to our relatives. And it hurts to see it like this, but... you've just got to be sensible, as I said, and adhere to the rules. And I'm sure it'll be fine. But when? I don't know.
Yeah. A little pain.
I keep rambling on whenever you ask me questions. So just cut me off.
No, it's okay.
Shut up, man.
A little pain now, you know, in terms of handling this virus and this situation will go a long way in the future for us, you know. And as long as we're smart about it, that's the whole idea. And just have to be smart about it as a culture, as a person, and as people. So... but enough of virus, because I know we're all pretty sick of talking about the virus. Let's talk about football. And, you know, this is kind of our version of the fireside chat, right? Where we didn't make any preparations for this. I wanted more of this to be more of a free-flowing idea. And Stell, because you ramble, I'm going to go to Rob with this first. And it's a thing that I heard here today. Yeah. I heard this driving around. They were talking about players becoming managers, and somebody had mentioned Diego Costa because, you know, he's starting to wind down. They're talking about maybe him coming to MLS and so on and so forth. And they wondered if he would make a good manager a la Diego Simeone. And I thought to myself, no, I think ultimately Diego Costa would make a horrible manager. I don't think he's a people person. I think he knows how to get under people's skin, but I don't picture him as being a people person. Where Simeone is not necessarily a people person either, but he's intelligent about the game. So I thought to myself, what are the characteristics of a manager, and are there any strikers out there that would be managers? Because usually we see midfielders, we see central defenders, we've even seen goalkeepers become managers, but we've never really seen strikers become managers. You know, I mean, the one that's most recent that comes to mind is Thierry Henry, who's come on to MLS and he's coaching up at Montreal. But for the most part, we don't see strikers do that. And I thought to myself, why? You know, first, what are the characteristics of a footballer that needs to translate into being a manager? And two, you know, what footballer is out there today? What footballer is playing out there that would make a manager? The first person that came to mind to me is as a striker, would have to be somebody that's a cerebral striker, somebody that makes all the right runs, all the intelligent runs, and all the smart moves and all the intelligent plays. And for me, first name that came to mind for me was Robert Lewandowski. I think that as a striker, he might be the one. I mean, everyone knows we're expecting Andres Iniesta, we're expecting Andrea Pirlo, we're expecting those cerebral midfielders to come and funnel through to the next level, but we never really talk about a striker. So, Rob, I'm going to go to you first, giving you all of that nonsense, and asking you, who comes to mind as a striker that would make a great manager?
Well, jumping back to what you said, and still I'm sure you could help me on this given the more footballers that you've seen in the past. I mean, we have seen strikers that have been managers. One that just actually came up to mind right now was someone like Ruud Gullit. You know, he coached Chelsea. He was Marco van Basten as well. He coached Ajax and the Dutch team. So it's not exactly rare to see it. But I think in terms of what would be a good striker that could be a good manager, it's tough because I think maybe they don't really see the game as much as everyone else does. You know, like a defender or a midfielder has to be cerebral and has to think a lot, you know, goalkeepers as well. I mean, I think any position can obviously become a good manager. They just have to have it in them. I think they have to be very outspoken. I think they really have to be more of a leader, you would say, and just have that kind of ambition. I think someone that might be a good manager that just comes out to the mind maybe is someone as Cristiano Ronaldo. I think someone that obviously has won it all. He's a leader. He's done it everything that he could do. Playing wise, and he's someone that gains respect. I mean, he's like one of those figures that, you know that when you're dealing with someone like Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, you have immense respect because of the career that he's had. So even though he's not really a striker, but he's more of a forward, if I had to give maybe a more obvious option, if off the top of my head, I mean, probably someone like Thomas Muller. I mean, I feel like he's probably someone that is also cerebral, that just has that kind of unique position onto the pitch that has that mentality that's different from other players across the world. You know, he's one that comes up to mind as well. It's an interesting discussion, actually. And actually, you know, when you talk about the great managers out there, you know, that have been former players, you know, the likes of Pep Guardiola, he was a midfielder. Simeone, as you mentioned, the midfielder. You know, I can go on and on about all the great managers that are out there in the world. It does seem a bit interesting how they tend to come from someone that works in the midfield or even as defenders. I mean, Stone, I guess I'll go back to you. I mean, to follow up what Joe said, I mean, who do you think would make a great manager that is a striker? And, you know, why do you feel that perhaps those that are defenders or midfielders or goalkeepers just turn out better?
I don't know, mate. The thing is, how many great players have you seen become great managers? I can't think of many, to be fair. Right. Can't think of many. I mean, look,
Cruyff.
Sir Alex, Cruyff. Yeah, Cruyff. Yeah, Cruyff, yeah, one. That's one.
Guardiola.
But Sir Alex was a striker. Sir Alex Ferguson was a striker.
Yeah, that's right.
Brian Clough was a striker. Bobby Robson was what they called an inside forward, but they'd like play the 2-3-5 formation back in those days. So you got three there. Viali was a good manager. Yeah, I think he didn't have a great spell after Chelsea. But Montella, he was a good striker. He was a good manager. Simone Inzaghi.
Yeah.
But in terms of current players that could turn out to be good head coaches, I don't know. It's difficult to say because I remember watching Mark Hughes as a youngster. And I thought, yeah, one day he'll be a great coach. But, I didn't know. So, yeah, it's difficult for me to say. I really can't call it right now. You're putting me on the spot here, boys.
Yeah. Oh, Zidane is another example. You know, great manager. Yeah. Well, obviously great in the sense that he's won collectively a lot of titles and a great player, obviously. So that's another example.
But let me ask you this.
Well, I thought Jaap Stam would be a good head coach, but he's failed miserably.
Yeah,
he's failed miserably. He was at Reading. He did all right in his first season, but then.
But let me ask you this: is there an advantage to the mental development of a player? Like Rob said, you know, goalkeepers, central defenders, central midfielders tend to have more of the game in front of them when they play, where strikers are looking behind them as the game progresses. Is there an advantage to the position that you play as a player? Do you guys think that maybe lends yourself to becoming a better manager because of experience, because of what you see in front of you, and then translating it, you know, onto the sidelines, onto the pitch, onto the side of the pitch, where you can call from memory or call from experience and say, hey, I remember this as a player, so I want to position these players, become maybe a better tactician because of where you played and what you saw in your career?
Well, I think they have to also adapt to like the current styles and like the current landscape of how the game is played, or at least how it's viewed than it was back then when they were a player. That's probably another suggestion I have.
Well, no, I mean, look, Ancelotti used to be a midfielder. Conte was a midfielder. Zidane was a midfielder. Who else? Who was Guardiola was a midfielder.
Guardiola.
Jurgen Klopp? Was he a
defender? I think he was a defender. Yeah.
Sounds right.
Mourinho was a translator.
Yeah. Well, Saki didn't even play. No. Look how he turned out.
Did Wenger even play? Right. Did Wenger even play at the highest level? I don't think he did.
I don't think he made it to the highest level, but he was in some I believe he came up through French football, but not at the highest level.
Well, a French pub team.
I think it was a little higher than that.
Farmers League.
PSG. No,
behave.
You know, I'm just wondering if that's one of the key.
It could do, but then again, we've seen goalkeepers turn into head coaches. They've been trash. Walter Zenger. He wasn't a great head coach, was he?
No.
Dino Zoff.
Was not that successful.
But then again, you got Franz Beckenbauer. That was a sweeper.
Yeah,
fantastic player, fantastic head coach. So yeah, it's a good question there, Joe.
Yeah, even Jupankis, you know, since we're on Bayern Munich, didn't Jupankis play? Wasn't he a defender? I think.
Oh, you're asking a question there.
I have to look him up now.
Didier Deschamps also is another example. You know, he's a good
central midfielder. He was. Carlos Dunga was a good, very good midfielder.
Not a good manager though. He's it's tough to have both careers.
I'm mistaken. Jupankis was a striker at Borussia Mönchengladbach in the 60s and 70s.
There you go.
Interesting. So he falls into the other.
But then again, do you think, given the circumstances with Neymar at the moment, do you think he'd be a good coach and would invest in youth?
No.
I know where you're getting at. Yeah.
Careful.
So you had Tim Vickery on the other day, and now I've lowered the tone. Great.
But
look at Maradona, for example. I mean, good player, but the manager?
Shambles.
All right, so let me ask. So, Rob, I want to go back to Cristiano Ronaldo with you, because I know you say that you think that he would be a good coach. I'm not convinced that he would be.
Why?
And
what does he look
like? No, for me, I don't know that he's as cerebral as I would want him to be. I think where Cristiano really makes up for it is in talent. I mean, you know, he can make a mistake and physically get himself out of that mistake. I feel like I've seen him mentally as tactical as, you know, some of the other. I would almost rather Luis Suarez over Cristiano Ronaldo. Well, I mean, again, when we're talking about intelligence, you know, Suarez is one of those guys that does make those right runs. Now, is he a hothead? Yeah. Is he crazy? Yeah. You know, but does he make the intelligent runs? Does he know where to be on the pitch at all times? Yeah, he does. And I don't know that he is physically as gifted as Cristiano Ronaldo, but I think he is where he lacks in the physical capabilities of Ronaldo. He makes up in the mental capabilities, where I think he might be a little more cerebral than Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, I'm going to throw that back at you, Rob, and say, what do you think, you know, what would you have to say to that? It's something I think that's worth debating.
Well, I think also you have to come in with a different mentality when you are a manager, because you're overseeing a lot of teams, you know, your entire team. You're overseeing even more pressure, I would say. You know, they tend to always just have that kind of different mentality. You know, maybe once as what you were as a player probably won't work as a manager, where you have to be much more of a senior authority, much more professional, I would say. I mean, yeah, they're obviously, this isn't to say Suarez is not a professional. He's a complete professional. But I think when you transition into this kind of different position, you have to have a different mentality. And it's probably just how they view themselves. I mean, it's a different lifestyle. It's a different way of programming yourself. It's kind of like changing the chip on how you view the game. Maybe, as I mentioned, you know, it's probably not the same as what you were able to do as a player, but as a manager, you come in with a different mindset, a different idea, and you want to implement your own style. Yes, you could be influenced, of course, but you got to have your you have to have your own style is what I have to say. I mean, all right, if you're going for cerebral players, I mean, you know, you have someone like Xavi that's doing his coaching jobs over there in Qatar right now. He possibly could be a favorite to be the next Barcelona manager. Maybe someone like Iniesta, when he hangs up his boots, he could probably fall in the footsteps. Maybe even someone like Lionel Messi. But I just don't feel like Messi would probably have that kind of I wouldn't say mentality. I feel like he needs to, he's not as vocal as he would be. I mean, yes, he earns a lot of respect similar to all the other players I'd mentioned, but I just feel like for him, it doesn't convince me enough. And also, there's also this kind of thing. It's like, you know, how much of your legacy do you want to taint if something goes bad when you were a great player, in your professional career? And then when you shift as a manager, it's not exactly the same.
Well, we'd have to ask Zidane that question, right? I mean, that would be a question number one for him. You know, what was the gamble of becoming a manager when you were arguably one of the top 10 players to ever play the game? I mean, that, I think that's just a gamble. And I think in many ways, let's put it this way, Maradona, the manager, could never do enough bad, I don't think, to tarnish Maradona, the player. Right. And Maradona, the manager, has been quite awful in many instances. You know, but I do think, you know, going back to Luis Suarez versus Cristiano Ronaldo, I think there's one key that Ronaldo would have way over Suarez, and that's the ability to raise players up around him, to lift up players, kind of to be that cheerleader, right? I mean, Stella, that's going to be one of the components that we're going to want or we're going to need in a manager, is the ability to raise the players' levels that he's coaching to get the most out of each player. I think Jurgen Klopp does that very, very well. I think Guardiola does it very, very well. You know, and I think Cristiano Ronaldo is built to do that very well as well, where I don't know Suarez is, but I question the cerebral, the cerebrality. How's that for a new word, right? Of Cristiano Ronaldo versus Luis Suarez, just judging by the way they play style. What are your thoughts on that?
Joe, what you've got to take into consideration is that a lot of footballers, when they retire, it's very difficult for them to let go.
Right.
Some of them go into coaching, some of them go into scouting, or they end up on television, or they just do something related to the game, because, as I said, it's their fix, it's their drug. Mm-hmm. And when you look at someone like Cristiano Ronaldo, I don't think he will get involved in football once he retires, because he's got everything he needs. He's missed out on a lot of family time, so to speak. I think once he's done. He doesn't want anything to do with it. That's what I think. And to be fair, he won't have to, because A, he's got enough money, and B, he'll probably go into like what David Beckham's doing in terms branding and what he may buy a club,
ownership,
but I don't, something like that. But I don't think he'll be front and center like he is now. Suarez, again, I don't know about him. I think he'll go into acting or something like that. You could tell he'll make like a Bond villain, won't he?
He'd make a wonderful Bond like villain.
That's it.
Yeah.
But I just think, it's tricky. But going back to, you know, what we were talking about, star players and if they can motivate their own players if they do become coaches. I've spoken to players who have played under Glenn Hoddle and under Frank de Boer, and they've said to me, it's like these coaches can't let go of their past, and they will do things on the training field to undermine their own players. I don't know if I told you this story, but I was talking to a guy, I don't know if I should tell you, I'm not going to tell you his name, but he was telling me stories at Crystal Palace that when de Boer was head coach, and they'd be taking free kicks, and de Boer would be whipping these free kicks in the top corners, and he'd be like, that's how you do it. Now, okay, great, you've still got the techers, but let's be real, man, that's not how you motivate your players. Glenn Hoddle would be doing tricks and flicks and all that kind of stuff in training and putting down his younger players. And while he was probably doing that, maybe because he was new to management, because I think he was only at Swindon and Chelsea prior to that. I think, did he get the England job before Spurs? I can't remember. But, it's a bit of a weird one. Again, some players can't seem to let go, and it's not a surprise when you see a lot of great players failing as head coaches, because it's almost as if, as I said, they were front and centre as players, but they can't translate that into coaching. They can't, they're the kind of players that drag their teammates through the mire when they're struggling. Look at Steven Gerrard, for example. He was Liverpool's man for years, right? But you could tell he always had that influence, that positive influence, and he wasn't the kind of player that would, down tools. Okay, granted, people are going to argue that he wanted to move to Chelsea, but that's by the by. He still dug Liverpool out the mire so many times. So I think he's doing well at Glasgow Rangers. So again, I think it's down to the application. I think it's down to tactical nous. I think it's down to, again, as I said, dedication, how committed they are to the job, and if they remain grounded. Because, sometimes some players feel that they are bigger than the club.
Well, it's funny. You talked about De Boer and how he would whip in those free kicks and say, oh, this is how you do it. We heard similar stories about Thierry Henry when he was over at Monaco, right? He would basically storm off the pitch because players weren't doing it the way he used to do it himself. So there's got to be a level of, I guess, humility where, okay, I know I'm that good, but this is not about me anymore. It's about them. And you wonder if they're getting back into that, into the realm of coaching as their drug, like you'd said, Stel, but it's really not, it's not the same drug. Do you know what I mean? It is.
Yeah. But Joe, do you know what, when you're a top class player, I mean, look at Roy Keane, for example, look how he's treated some players in the past as a head coach. I mean, I've spoken to a few people that have been coached by Roy Keane, and they said that he is a top manager because he knows what it takes to win. And when you've got a group of players that want to be winners, it rubs off on them. But then you've got other players where they can't reach the level that he expects them to be because, okay, it was the infancy of his coaching career and whatnot. And obviously he still had that United hat on, so to speak, where you're constantly winning trophies, constantly winning games. And you look around you when you're a player and you've got the likes of Scholes, Beckham, et cetera, and then when you're coaching, you've got this one who was at Farnborough, and you got this one that was at, I don't know, Stoke City's reserves. And they're nowhere near that level. But because he expects so much from his players, a draw, a defeat is not good enough. Winning is the only thing. So, some players do feel a bit intimidated, not just because of the name, but because of the expectancy. So it's a tricky one, Joe.
Yeah. All right, I'm gonna close out the interview because I'm going to ask one more question. Since we're on the idea of players becoming managers, and I'm going to start with you, Stel. Is there a player right now, currently, now no one that's ever expressed the want or need to coach after their career, and they can be anywhere from Kylian Mbappe at or Christian Pulisic under 20 years old, to somebody like Sergio Ramos, who's towards the end of his career in his 30s and possibly hanging them up, or Gigi Buffon even at 43. is there one player, Stell, I'm going to start with you, that is currently playing that you are absolutely dying to see them become a head coach, and even a head coach of your favorite team?
Oh, my God.
You get to pick anybody. You can pick anybody you want.
Why'd you do this to me, man? Just, you know what? I'm going to say this because he's my friend, Matt Derbyshire at Omonia. I want him to be a head coach.
Okay.
I want him to be a head coach, and I want him to be successful because I love the guy to bits.
Yeah. Club coach or national team coach?
Give him the England job. Get, in fact, make him England striker. Make him England striker now because they got so many injuries. Let him be England striker right now.
Sure.
Derbyshire for England, mate.
All right. Rob, how about you? Anybody?
Man, it's putting me on the spot as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just, and
you know what?
Like,
you know what?
Yeah,
I have a good name. I don't know if he would ever be successful, but I feel like he would definitely be someone that definitely has seen a lot of stuff and definitely has that kind of background. I think I'd like to see someone like Carlos Tevez be a manager because I feel like he just has that fire in him. And you know, he's a winner, obviously, because he won so many stuff during the course of his career. I think he'd be a great manager, whether he gets a national team job or a club job. I'd love to see him be a good manager. I don't want him to be as crazy as a manager, but I'd love to see him do bits with a lot of with whatever team that he goes to.
He would certainly
Rob,
be.
Can you imagine him with Patrice Evra and Ji Sung Park as his assistants? Because they're all good mates.
That would be hilarious. Manchester United. Tevez at Manchester United, the new manager.
Never, yeah. Never.
Where's Bielsa when you need him?
That's haram, blasphemous. Turn around. Don't hear that.
So just keep in mind, guys, I asked this question not because I had planned to ask it. I asked it because it just popped in my head. So I'm on the spot here, too, on this one. And I thought of two names. And the first name, which I can't pick because he doesn't play anymore, which is Andrea Pirlo. I would love, you know, just that cerebral type player.
Nah, man, he's too busy sitting, you know, by the pool,
drinking
his, he's living his
espresso
best life.
And mm-hmm. you know, drinking, reading his Corriere dello Sport and all that.
Let him chill.
Yeah, so I would like to see the person that many have anointed in Italian football as the next Andrea Pirlo, and that would be Sandro Tonali. You know, from the glimpses we've gotten from, I mean, and obviously I'm going way back. I think he's 19, if I remember correctly. So he's got a long ways to develop here, but the intelligence that I've seen out of this kid on the pitch so far at Brescia has been absolutely incredible. And I think that he's provided he develops under the right coaches and the right, you know, he takes the right steps. I think that he is somebody that would be interesting as a head coach if, you know, as he develops through his career. However,
he actually gave me another Italian that sorry, Joe, I just want to jump in. Now you gave me another Italian because he said Brescia. I would like to see I'll go the crazy route. Mario Balotelli.
I knew it was coming.
Crikey. Yeah. Literally fireworks every
It'd be entertaining, wouldn't it? You know.
Hey Joe, how about this one? Daniele De Rossi.
You know, De Rossi's another one that actually is I wanted to pick somebody who was still playing. De Rossi is another guy that can be inspirational. It's almost like Totti, but a little more built like Simeone, right? A little more fiery, a little more physical, a little more, you know, that kind of spunk and determination. I would like to see De Rossi maybe get into coaching himself. But I wanted to pick somebody that was playing right now. And that's why I didn't go the route of that. You know, even Del Piero, if we went back to strikers, I wouldn't mind seeing Del Piero because he's another guy that was intelligent off the ball. So that's another guy. But I want to give you one more name that I think when he does hang up the boots, if he does decide to go into coaching, because of his quality and his style of play, and again, the intelligence that he shows on the pitch, I think would make a great manager. And that's Kevin De Bruyne. I think he's a guy I would love to see as a manager because I think he can be that next cerebral manager, that next thinking players manager. And I don't, you know, does he have the spunk and the spark like Cristiano Ronaldo to possibly elevate his players around him? I don't know. But man, if that guy's not intelligent on the pitch, I don't know who is. I mean, so I'm going to throw De Bruyne out at you guys. And what do you think of that name?
Well, look, I think that's a great, great shout there, Joe. But the thing is, let's be fair, right? If Berlusconi still owned the football club, mm-hmm. right, the only person that he would appoint right now, based on recent incidents, Kyle Walker. That's all I have to say.
Kyle Walker. Yeah, right. Yeah, because he could play goalkeeper, defender. He's got to be quite cerebral, right?
And he loves parties.
Yeah, there you go.
A little bunga bunga for everybody, right, mate?
That's the one. Si, senor.
So Stout, what I know obviously we're in the middle of a pandemic, and many of the podcasts out there, and including ours, has kind of slowed things down a little bit, praying for the start of some semblance of football. What are you guys doing at Shoot the Defense, you know, going on right now, and what's coming up next?
Right now, in my head, I've just clicked on that GIF of the Grinch smiling. That's me. yeah, okay. So, look, we're in a WhatsApp group, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Right?
Yes, we
and
are.
And certain things are said in this WhatsApp group, which we cannot repeat on air. But there's someone put something in the group about someone working hard. And do you know what? I thought, I'm not having this, okay? I'm not having this because you guys, me and a couple others, we've been doing podcasts for years. And I'm sick to death of other people getting credit which they do not deserve, right? That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say. So when I heard, oh, this so-and-so works really hard, I was like, nah, I'm going to show you what working hard really is. Now, I know you guys do one or two podcasts a week, and you guys have got your own things going on. I've just got more time on my hands, let's put it that way. You know, okay, I work, I do homeschooling and that kind of stuff, but I hardly sleep. So, you know, I look 50, even though I'm 49. Jesus. I'm adding 10 years to my life, right? But, I'm going to be 40 this year, crikey. So, yeah, I thought I'm going to try and do a podcast a day. And even if they are recorded a couple of days beforehand, I'll schedule them because we don't have thousands of listeners, you know, but we have enough listeners that message me every time that there's a new show and they say, oh, thanks for it and this and that. And I've had so many people messaging me the past few days saying, oh, thank you so much because it's got us through the day and that kind of stuff, which is great. And I don't do it just for... Okay, I don't do it for any recognition or anything, but I do it because I enjoy it and it passes the time. As you guys said, it's a very difficult time at the moment. We've got a lot on our minds and just talking to you guys about football, whether it be for half an hour, 40 minutes or whatever, is great. And I thought, let me just try and put out as much content as I can and also to prove some people wrong. So up until today, I've put out 30 pods in 30 days. Nice. I've got another 4 scheduled. To be released, so they've been recorded, so they're scheduled for release. So I'm going to keep trying to do one a day until I die.
Stella's being the podcast version of an Iron Man, Joe.
Exactly.
If you want to use a sports word.
Do you know what? I'm stubborn, right? And there's a word that I don't want to use to describe myself, right? Because it's rude, right? But it's a pain in the backside. Okay, how about that?
Right.
And I get a kick out of winding people up, right? It's a weird thing, right? Ask my kids. You know, you've seen the Instagram videos, right? But it's I know that every time I put out a new podcast, and I intentionally say, 29 pods in 29 days. I intentionally do it because I know it winds people up. And there are certain people that don't like it. There are certain people that, you know, will hide behind the screen and say, oh, congratulations, mate. Well, I know in actual fact, they don't really mean it. And like I said, I'm not doing it for any recognition. I'm doing it because I'm petty. that's effectively it.
At least you admit it. That's a good...
Yeah, but the thing is, I enjoy doing it as well because, as I said, it passes the time and, you know, it makes you realize that how many people are invested in your product, but your podcast and your brand, and you know, it's been great having people on, and you guys need to come on as well because I'm still waiting for you guys to tell me when you're free. But yeah, it's been great having people on. I've had ex-pros, coaches, you name it, it's great, and I'm trying to get more fans involved because we all remember the good times. And what I'm doing now is a top 5 matches feature, so people come on and tell me their top 5 matches, whether they played them or watched them. And the memories that come flooding back are unbelievable. I had a guy called Harry Harrison a few weeks ago.
Oh, great person.
Harry is fantastic, and I'll tell you what, his knowledge of football is it's out of this world. And he was talking about Italian 90 and all these different competitions from when I was a kid, and I'm like, bloody hell, I remember this game. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, I remember the older games more than I do the recent ones. So I don't know whether it's just me getting ill or just, I don't know, enjoyed the...
Nostalgic.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, but when I jump on your show, I keep on rambling. So I think I've actually spoken for 2 minutes and 33 seconds.
<He's tired. laughs> Even better. I'll tell you what, then.
Iron Man talking.
So, there you go. Exactly.
So on that note, make sure you check out Shoot the Defense and catch up on Stell's podcast.
Please, because I'm petty.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. So
gas him up as best as you can, obviously, because he loves it.
No doubt about it. So, gentlemen, since I've got you both here, we're going to close up shop. I'm going to hit the closing music. That's right. It's coming up. I think the computer had forgotten actually how to play it because it's been so long, it seems. But
it's on vacation.
Yep. But there it goes now. So, gentlemen, I want to thank you both. So, for episode 277 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Marco Trovato and Stel Stiliano for joining us.
Thank you, Marco.
Yeah, we'll have another show coming out soon and hopefully bring you some more podcasts. Again, stay safe, stay well, wash your hands. So, for episode 277 of Low Limit Football, I'm Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening,
everyone. And I'm paid.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.